This is Dave Crippen of the Design History Center of the Edison Institute. And today we're speaking with Mr. Charles H. Faneuf, P-H-A-N-E-U-F. Mr. Faneuf is currently a design manager of Large Car Exteriors, Studio A, of the North American Design segment of the Ford Motor Company. And this is Tuesday, December 3rd, 1985. Mr. Faneuf has had a long career with Ford Motor Company and also earlier on with Kaiser Frazier and Packard Motor Car. And we are asking him to tell us about his career in automotive design in his own way. So this is fairly sensitive. You can just sort of relax.
Well, I guess that I could say that my career was inspired by my father working in the industry.
In the automobile business?
In the automobile business. Mm-hmm. He worked for Chrysler Corporation. And at that time, he was the master mechanic of Dodge Truck. And approximately the age of, say, 7 or 8, my father had to go into the plant late at night for a model set up. And this, let's see, I guess the parts that they were working on at the time were setting up a body line that I recall the most. Mm-hmm. And I can remember that the vehicle, it was simply a body, and they had it in the fixture ready to weld. Mm-hmm. And I guess they called the boss in, and the boss was, of course, my father. And at that period of time, rather than leave me alone at night, he would take me into the plant with him. And it was quite an experience, and I would see these large pieces of metal being assembled into a body for a truck. Mm-hmm. And the one that I recall the most vivid to me was that they were just putting a new body together, and they were going to put the windshield in. Mm-hmm. And as we walked up to the body line, the men were very proud and said, "Mr. Faneuf, we've got this all set. We're ready to install the windshield." Well, one fellow walked up with the windshield, and at that time they were putting windshields in very similar to what they do today, a large rubber molding around it. Mm-hmm. The rubber molding had a rope in it, and they would hold this up to the sheet metal body, the DLO, which we call a DLO, the body opening, and a man would get on the inside. They would hold the windshield on the outside against the body. The guy on the inside would pull the string or the rope around it, and it would be installed in a sheet metal.
What's the DLO stand for?
Daylight opening.
Okay.
Yeah, we better be careful with it. Yeah. But I remember that as a man walked up and put the windshield up against the body, it fell right through the opening. The opening was too large.
Oh, no.
And I remember my father being very disgusted and the windshield falling on the steel plate and breaking into a million pieces.
Expensive too.
But that type of thing, I think, inspired me to get into the automotive business. He used to take me into the drafting room, and at that time, they were drafting on boards. They didn't use paper. They would take a 20-foot board, paint it black, which I guess you already know.
No.
And they would draw on the board. They would lay out the entire vehicle on the board.
With chalk, white chalk?
With pencil, chalk, what have you. Mm-hmm. But it was all drawn on a black board. Mm-hmm. And that's why they called it a black board.
Well, it really wasn't a standard black board. It was simply a board painted black.
It was a board painted black, about 20 feet long, where they could lay out the body, the fenders, the roof, the rear quarter panels.
No one's ever quite explained that to me. That's interesting. I always thought they assumed they used a huge schoolroom type blackboard and used chalk on it.
No.
Not so.
No. To sketch it out, they would.
Yeah.
But when it came down to fine lining it, which they did, you know, to drop it dimensionally.
Why was that used so long? It seemed awfully cumbersome and expensive to paint lumber black.
I really don't know why they weren't using vellum at that time. Perhaps it wasn't even developed at that time. It may not have been.
How about just plain roll paper?
Well, there was a lot of paper around, but not being used for that purpose.
Yeah.
I guess the board was dimensionally stable and paper would shrink.
True.
See?
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating.
So, and then upon being dragged in and out of the plant and through the engineering department, an idea took me through the Chrysler design and color.
Did he? What year was this?
And that must have been, let's see, must have been about 1932, 33, 34, 35. It must have been in that period there.
You were born in 1926, weren't you?
Correct. So it must have been in that period of time there. So from the...
What was the setup of the Chrysler design and color?
They were in Highland Park.
Were they in Highland Park? Mm-hmm.
Highland Park at the time, that I recall.
They have a fairly well-developed design. Could you recall, even though you're quite young, did it seem like they had a fairly well-developed design department there?
If I recall, it probably was a room about 40 by 60 that I saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was very much impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And
drafting tables.
And renderings on the wall and
the
sketches.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it their art and color department.
Art and color department.
Because really, the designers were the engineers, were the chassis engineers at that time.
Yeah.
There wasn't such a thing as a designer. Really.
Of course, at that point, they had Briggs, too, did they not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Briggs
did the actual designing beyond the engineering.
Yeah. They would build the tools and build the fixtures and build the bodies, really.
Who would do that?
Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And under John Charta, did they not have a fairly aggressive design department, too, didn't they?
I think that came later.
Oh, was that later?
I'm really not sure.
32, yeah.
Right.
Could be that Briggs became more active in the design area about the mid-30s.
I would say, being so young at the time, I really don't recall.
Yeah.
But I know there are very few designers known as designers, automotive designers. They were mostly chassis people that did the bulldog on engineering. Very similar thing to the way Gordon Buick got into the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a chassis engineer.
Yeah.
And at that time, they had to build a car. He would build it.
Yeah.
So he became the designer.
Yeah.
So I would say that really was the inspiration to it, clumsy as it is.
Well,
so my goal really was to become an automotive designer.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And of course the war broke out, and I joined the Army Air Force and spent a little time in that. When I got out in 1944. That's right. 1944. It's hard to remember. Easy.
Oh.
But at that period, when we got out of the Air Force, I had a choice of going to college or go to art school.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I went down to Wayne, went out to Michigan, and the only thing that they taught at that time was strictly fine arts. There wasn't such a thing as automotive design. So I was told by the counselors, the best thing for you to do is go to art school.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, of course. And after a short period in art school, which was really only about 2.5 years, now before then, I did have training at Cass Tech And Cass Tech, in my opinion, was worth 4 years art school.
Really?
It was really that good of an art school. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was commercial art. Yeah. And we were taught design, basic design, mm-hmm. but nothing in automotive design. But after the end of the war, the only thing that was available in Detroit at the time was Meisinger's Art School.
Where was that?
It's down on Michigan. Down on Woodward Avenue. It was right next to the church that Henry Ford was buried at. And I don't remember the corner that it was, because I remember watching the funeral of Mr. Ford out the window of the art school.
Is that the Episcopal Cathedral then?
Yeah, it was right in the corner of Woodward and something. Mm. It was, if I believe correctly, it was south of the art museum. Mm-hmm. Maybe six blocks. I'd have to look it up.
How do you spell Meisinger, by the way?
I think it was M-E-I-N-N. Z-I-N-G-E-R.
One N.
I think one N, yeah.
Is that the name of the founder?
No, he was a commercial artist, I guess. In fact, he ran the Birdseye Art Studio.
Mm-hmm. Meisinger did?
Right. Mm-hmm. And somehow he started up this art school. I don't know the history of it.
Was it fairly successful? Did they have a lot of students?
Yes, it did. In fact, it was a lot of GI students in there.
Right, taking advantage of the GI
Right. And the automotive companies at that time used to roam the art schools looking for talent.
Yeah.
And they would wine and dine us and try to get us out of school and established in a job, mm-hmm. which they did. They did recruit us.
I mean, previous to this, you'd had a short period at one whole year, academic year at the University of Denver.
Right, but that was during the period that we were being trained as cadets out in...
Oh, okay. Good.
In Denver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought that up. It does get a little confusing.
You were a cadet in the Army Air Force.
Right. At that time, we were concerned. You could either become a designer right on the board, and that's really what the companies needed. At that particular time,
which means the very beginning level, and also the very beginning of design.
Yes, at that time I think it was really.
Yeah.
Before that period, most automotive companies, Chrysler, Ford, I know, hired Walker.
Mm-hmm.
There were. Three or four other well-known designers out in the field that the companies bought their designs from.
Mm-hmm.
They would ask them for 20 sketches of bodies or 20 sketches of roofs, what have you. And this is probably its big expansion period during that time for all the automotive companies was hiring talent right out of the schools.
That's interesting. There was a post-war boom, of course, and talent was desperately needed.
Yes. That's why they dragged us out of school. So, it's one question that I put to the guy that dragged me out of school, and I don't even remember his name. I said, do we really need a degree? And he says, no, you don't. What you have is adequate.
Uh-huh.
And...
You showed him a portfolio?
Right.
Uh-huh.
They would look through our portfolios.
Uh-huh.
But I think that cost me a lot of money throughout my life. I would say a tune of about $400,000.
Wow.
I believe a degree is that valuable to a young man today.
To the personnel administrators.
Right. Yeah. I think it is.
Well, you were there for a good year at Meisinger,
mm-hmm.
and you absorbed
absorbed obviously a lot of technique and training. Who recruited you? What type of person? Was it a person from the automotive company?
Yeah, it was a guy from Kaiser Frigier. And I really don't recall his name.
This was in 47.
Right. About 47.
Kaiser Frigier was going strong and hopefully was going to become a concern with staying power.
Right. When I was hired in at Kaiser's, we had three men. It was Cliff Fox, who is retired now, Duncan McRae, who worked at Ford Motor Company, and followed by the name of Gordon Tursey, that T-U-R-S-S-E-Y, I think it was. And the boss was Herb Weisinger, who was an old Chrysler designer.
W-E-I-S-S-I-N-G-E-R. Herb
Weisinger.
Right. He had come over from Chrysler to Kaiser Frazier.
He was in the art and color department.
That you had visited.
That I had visited years earlier.
Did you remind him of this when you met him?
No, I did not.
No, you shouldn't.
But he was a terrific guy. He was really... He also taught me a hell of a lot in 1 year's time.
Did he?
He was really good. He's a very giving person. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I became his illustrator. Mm. So I was that good, and he was that good to let me. He was a marvelous draftsman. He had command of form in line that was unbelievable. In fact, he also did commercial work on the side. In fact, most of the brochures were done by the automotive designers themselves.
Really?
Right.
The sales brochures or the promotion brochures?
Promotion. Yeah. It was quite a thing.
Is Mr. Weisinger still alive?
No, he's passed away.
What sort of work did they have you doing there, Kaiser Frazier, when you first hired in?
The first assignment at that time, I believe it was the 47-48. The year was 47. Mm-hmm. The project at the time was an all-new body for the Kaiser.
Uh-huh.
And that was the body that was developed with the Sweetheart windshield. Mm-hmm. Very clean design. That entire project started out at zero, and it was completed within a year.
Good heaven.
Yes.
What kind of speed up did you have? What was it? You sort of running around in fast motion, I suspect, all your time.
No, it was just the way things were done in those days, really. We built a model and they built it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I think there were three proposals
for
the new body.
Uh-huh. Was it to be a new body for the entire line, the Kaiser and the Frazier?
Yes. They only had one body.
They're really interesting.
Right. It was only one, yeah. It had a different grill for one to the other, but...
Where was the plant? Where'd you work?
Willow Run. It was the old bomber plant. Mm-hmm. And it was right off the expressway. They had built a new engineering building, I guess, at the just about the end of the war. And we took over that building. I remember it was very close to the expressway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's still there. The fellow that ran it, as I remember, was Mr. Cadwalder. That's what it was.
How do you spell that?
It was Cadwalter, if I remember right.
He ran which function at Kaiser Frazier?
He was the director of Kaiser Frazier Design.
Ah.
We had two studios. There was a Kaiser studio and the Frazier studio. Of course, we both lunched off of both bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz Grissinger.
Was he with you then?
He was hired in while I was there.
Oh.
Right. In fact, Buzz did the little Kaiser mini car at the time.
The Henry J.
Oh. So.
That was his baby.
That was his baby. He also worked on a larger-bodied Kaiser, but that was his project after we had finished the 50. That became the 51 Kaiser, I believe.
Mm-hmm. How was Kaiser doing at this point? Were they struggling?
They were going balls out. They sold everything that they could build at that time.
Really?
Yes.
Pretty going strong. Huh?
Yeah. A very strong company.
This was in 47, 48.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How was the design department? You say Mr. Weisinger was a good man to work for? And with?
He was the best, in my opinion.
Was he?
He was. No, Grissinger. Weisinger was in the other studio. He was in the... took over Johnny Chaika's job, which was the Kaiser studio.
Oh, I spoke Johnny's name.
Chaika? God, I really don't recall. C-H-I-C-K-A.
Okay.
Yeah. Johnny Chaika was there. He was also a designer from Chrysler's. He was a body man. Most of the people were body people.
It's interesting that the tradition of styling or design had to really struggle to cut himself loose from the body engineers.
Right. Well, you can't really.
Yeah. It's really an integral process.
Part, isn't it? Right. Yeah. One has the aesthetic sense.
Right.
And the other one has the mechanical discipline to make it work.
Right. Usually with an engineering background.
Right. Yeah. Really. Because we have to work hand in hand with them. They got to build it. Which a lot of designers forget.
I think you can make a model and from that you can go on and
make
the finished car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how was the atmosphere at Chrysler? You said the supervision was benign and...
Why do you say Chrysler?
I'm sorry, I'm Kaiser Frazier.
Kaiser Frazier?
You were working for Buzz Grissinger at the time, or...?
Yes.
He became and at that exact time, stylist or director?
Mr. Kallwalder was the director, Buzz was the design manager.
Okay.
And Buzz and Herb Weisinger and Buzz Grissinger were the managers of the studios at the time. And one other name, Damon Woods, who was finally hired by Ford Motor Company 7 years later. And maybe you got him tapped in there someplace. Damon got had an accident out on 94 some years ago that took his life. But Damon Woods was a layout man at the time.
Was he?
Out of Kaiser Frazier. In fact, I have a paper. If I can find the darn thing, it gives the entire studio. If I can dig it out of my archives, I'll give you a copy of
Please
it.
Please do.
That would be fun to have.
Did you see Duncan McRae was there also?
Yeah, Duncan McRae.
That's quite a lineup.
Yeah. There are only really a very few designers, automotive designers, at that time.
True. Yeah. GM had most of them.
Right, GM had most of them. Yeah, in fact, they only had... I think they only had about two to a studio. At the time.
KF?
And at KF we had three.
Three?
Three to the studio.
When came this extravagance? People just felt that was for them to do.
Actually, I believe at Ford we used to produce 26 models.
Wow.
You know, and that's a hell of a far cry from what we do today. And we have more engineers today.
Yeah.
We have better facilities today. But just doesn't seem as though we can get the product out today.
It's
getting tougher and tougher.
We had a pretty good group there.
Yes, it was. It was a very good group. Let's see, what else?
Did the Darren influence come in before you left?
Darren was in there periodically working on a model that was in competition with our model.
The 50 or 51.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing that, true story to that design problem was that Buzz Grissinger really and truly, I would say, developed the new body. Darren, at that time, was in and out, real flaky.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of a consultant, really, wasn't
he? Right. Mm-hmm. The only thing that he sold Old Man Kaiser on is that sweetheart on the windshield and on the backlight.
Backlight, that was
right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Those are his trademarks.
So. That was his only mark that he put in the vehicle, as I recall it.
They didn't call it the Darren Chrysler until a couple years later, did they?
The Darren?
Yeah.
Well, it was just like I was buying some fabric designer to put their name on her vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It was very similar to
that. So his input was quite minor.
Right. In fact, he was thrown out of there.
Really?
At that time.
He came back later, though, didn't he? Yeah. Or was that the end of his association with Chrysler?
I think that was the end. He tried to get back.
1551.
Right. Because
yeah.
Evidently he was being paid X numbers of cents for each previous model that had been built.
Oh.
You know.
Had he had an input that, before the 50?
That was his body, the one that slab-sided vehicle on the 50. That was his body, as I understand it. Yeah. So. And he also tried to bring out that Darren sports car at the time,
right,
with the sliding front door.
Yeah. What happened to that?
I don't recall.
Had
I think it died.
Then?
Yeah, I had left by then. Yeah.
Who was running the company? Was Edgar running the company, Edgar Kaiser, at that time, or was it Henry himself?
It was Henry. Yeah.
He was still the dynamo in
charge. Right.
Although he was gone 6 months out of the year. Or,
yeah.
What about the Jeep? Was the Jeep being developed on an independent basis, or was that?
No, that had already been developed.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But we had nothing to do with
no
that type of vehicle.
Yeah.
The last project that I worked on during that period was we did the, on the old body, what I remember, is we did the convertible. If you remember, it had a B-pillar of glass. Well, you got an A-pillar. The center pillar of the vehicle is what we call the B-pillar,
uh-huh,
where the doors lock and hinge.
Uh-huh.
For the rear door.
Right.
It was a four-door convertible.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a pillar, we put in a large piece of glass there in the frame.
Really?
But that was quite innovative at the time.
Yeah.
Right. And the last project that we worked on was to make a five-door version of the 51 body to sell to that would be sold through Sears and Roebuck. It was called the Allstate.
Allstate, yeah. That was just a
Do you recall
of a,
that?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Good.
That was a sort of just a copy of the...
It was the same body.
Same body, yeah.
Only we cut a roof, we cut the roof out, put in structure for the five-door. The entire backlight went up, similar to what our five-door vehicle is
today. Sort of
a
hatchback, in a way.
It was a hatchback.
Early hatchback.
It was the... I would say one of the first.
It wasn't the Travelall, was it?
No, I think it was Allstate.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe it became Travelall after I left.
After you left, it may have modified it, yeah.
But it never hit the road, that I recall.
It never got out?
It never got out, that I know.
What happened? Did you ever find out?
No, I don't recall, really. I think Sears Roebuck just dropped it, or Henry dropped it, one of the two.
Was there an attempt by Kaiser to get this Sears tie-in? What was the
marketing
behind that?
I guess we needed sales.
Sales
at that time, right? Sales were dropping.
The post-war boom was over, and people were getting a little more selective.
Yeah.
More competition, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to come up with a choice that was a little less limited to
right.
some rather obvious and awkward facelifts.
Mm-hmm.
Although Kaiser Frazier was probably the only real new post-war car. Right?
Yes, it was.
And that's why it was so popular the first two or three years after the war. But they got stodgy, didn't they, a little bit? They seemed to have lost their imagination or their zest to their verve.
Well, what I believe happened was that shortly before I left, they brought in a guy by the name of, God, if I can remember. I think it was Lindbergh. And he
Lundberg.
Was it Lundberg?
Was it the same guy?
No, no. No.
Lindbergh, okay.
I think it was Lindbergh, and he evidently was one of the plant managers of the one of Mr. Kaiser's cement factories.
Oh, oh no.
So he knew absolutely nothing about it.
The new plant man.
Did we beat Lindbergh to death?
No, not
here. No, that's great. We'll just put it here.
So Mr. Lindbergh was brought in by from one of the Kaiser industries on the West Coast.
Right. And I guess under his direction that finally the company went under.
What, do you have any idea how or what happened? Just unimaginative or what?
I guess it was the quality of the product. Really.
It just went downhill.
It just went downhill.
That's
and
50, that's
primarily, I guess they blamed it on all the non-automotive people that, you know, once they got the plant running and got it going very well, then they started to replace the automotive people that they had hired in Detroit here and replace them with people out of his various industries. I guess it became very plush. They came in and everything went to the devil. And I think they lost it. That's the way they lost it.
Do you feel that, now Mr. Frazier left before the 50s came on, did he not?
I don't recall.
Joe Frazier had been an old line car man from before World War II, had he not?
He had something to do with the Jeep at that time.
Yeah.
That was under a military contract.
Right,
you know.
Yeah.
And then I think when his son got into it.
Edgar Kaiser.
Right.
Things are, the old man stopped having any direct interest in it and it just went down the drain.
Yeah. Not traveling in those circles. I could only see for my perspective.
Why did you leave? You saw the handwriting on the wall or you got a better offer?
No. In fact, I loved it.
Uh-huh.
I was approached by John Reinhart at that time.
I spelled Johnson.
Reinhart.
Now, where was he?
John, at the time, evidently was just starting out at Packard, and I surmise this, I'm not positive of it. But he was a chief designer at Packard, and he needed people, like everyone in the industry needed people. General Motors needed people. Chrysler needed people. So it was very lucrative at that time. You would stop in and have a little bit of lunch and people would approach you for a job in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite an exciting time for a young man to be in the business, you know. And John made a very nice offer and I simply couldn't refuse. So I went to Packard. And the department was existed of John Reinhart, Ed McCauley.
This was Alvin McCauley's son.
Son.
Mm-hmm. And MC McCauley, how do you spell that?
C-A-U-L-L.
One L. M-C.
I think it's two.
C-A-U-L-E-Y.
Y.
Yeah.
In fact, Charlie's Crabs got their... All of Ed McCauley's, Alvin McCauley's woodwork in their restaurant. Out.
Really?
Yeah.
From his office or his
No,
home?
From his mansion.
From his mansion?
Out on the boulevard in Grosse Pointe there.
But it was demolished a few years ago.
Right. They even destroyed Old Man Forts, too.
That's right.
But there was, McCauley was the chief designer. Or director. John was the executive designer, and there was one man there, a fellow by the name of Howard Yeager. And
how do you spell his last name?
Y-E-A-G-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were his duties?
He was the only designer there.
Uh-huh.
And we worked in the engineering complex on Concord Avenue. Across the hall was the engineering department.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to us was the adjacent to our studio, which was about, well, I'd say 14 by 20 feet, was the Ultramatic group that developed the Ultramatic transmission.
Was that a first for the industry, or one of the early ones?
I think Chrysler was out first, but the one that Packard was developing at the time was a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
All I recall is that we would go down the basement and they had a large shaft that they used to line the this large hole with 2x4s, and then they would spin the converters until they self-destructed. And it was amazing to me because it would chew up these 2x4s into toothpicks.
Really?
When they exploded.
Now what were you converting?
They were spinning the converters.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a large donut-shaped object that is in your transmission.
Oh, of course, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was...
Ultramatic was a trade name for the Packard automatic transmission.
Yeah. I believe so at the time.
Right.
Yeah. And our task at that time was to come up with a new body. The post-war body that they had on the Packard... I believe after the 120 that turned into the bathtub, if you remember the bathtub design.
What year was that again?
That would have to be in the, I believe in 41.
Uh-huh.
41, and then the next body, I believe, was the body that John Nye developed, which was the 1951 body that we developed in. That to be in 48.
48, yeah, when you first got
48,
there.
48, mm-hmm. Right.
So Reinhardt was looking for help. He needed help desperately.
Right. We hired one other designer, and his name was Bob Jones. And we hired him away from Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two designers and one director, John, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Where was you have pretty good studios, do you recall? Was it fairly spacious?
Packard really only had this small design studio that we did 3/8 drawings. There wasn't even a place to make a full-size drawing.
Really?
Again, Packard was behind the industry, and they were still using blackboards out in the shop that they would resurface. You would draw on the blackboard and go from there and give the engineering people the information that they needed to design the parts. Our clay studio was located on the fourth floor as a part of the wood shop.
Oh my God.
In fact, it was probably a room 30 feet, 30 by 30. And the model was developed from a quarter size model. And then it went to a 3/8 size model.
Well, what composition were models in those days?
They were armatures that were made out of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And before John's time, the drawings were given to the wood pattern makers, and they would go from directly from the drawing to wood models.
Would be scale, 3/8, you're saying, a quarter.
Well, they would go to full size at that time.
They would. They make full size models.
We introduced the quarter size models.
Did you?
And the 3/8 size models to nail down the design before we took it further.
So that'll be the necessity for the full-size one.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
say we, you mean you and John Reinhardt?
Johnny Reinhardt
and our process?
At Packards, we did.
Really?
Yeah, right.
That's great.
Before that, they didn't know anything about that type of designing.
How did that come about? Did you sit down and say, look, this is ridiculous, why make a huge...
Well, it was already done in the industry, see, but Packard wasn't using it.
Well, they weren't.
That's
so you
right.
introduced it to Packard.
So we introduced it to Packard. Clay models were, I guess, first instituted at General Motors.
And you began using clay at the beginning of the 30s, I think.
Yeah. And Chrysler at that time was using what they call plasticine or something like that.
Really?
It was a green type of clay that would not harden, and you really couldn't get a good surface on it.
Right.
The clay that we use today has been developed from our needs to the clay mixer, really.
Right. Yeah.
And we've got a hard surface material that is completely foreign to what it started out to be.
Dried very quickly.
Yeah, and you can rework it and heat it. And
mm-hmm. Very malleable.
But it was all new process to Packard Motor Car. We had to actually teach the pattern makers to become clay modelers.
Hmm.
And that was a lot of fun at the time.
Were they amenable to this?
Oh, yes, potential? Because, you know, the fellow could read a print.
Sure.
The man could read a print. And you could give him a drawing, and he could cut a few templates and start to block in the model.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
So that's the way that it got started within Packards.
So they wanted you to do a whole new body, come up with a whole new body for the first post-war new
Packard.
Packard.
Mm-hmm. Which we did. And at that time, Briggs took over the design from our quarter-size model, built a full-size model in their design department.
Now, what size would that be?
Pardon?
What would their full-size model be made of?
It was made of clay, too.
Good, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Good.
And I really don't recall the name of the fellow that was at Briggs Manufacturing. Maybe someone else in your travels will come up with that. But the full-size model was developed there. John and I would do liaison work between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And we furnished them with our 3/8 model.
Uh-huh.
And our drawings. And they did the final clay model.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, from there, the dies were developed and so on and so forth.
Where would the body engineers be in this process?
Body engineers were still back at across the hall from our design studio on the 4th floor.
But they kept in touch with all everything you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
Almost daily.
Right.
Yeah. They had developed the package initially.
Right.
Yeah.
It was our package, our drawing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And if I remember right, the chief body engineer was named Fred MacArthur.
Fred MacArthur?
I believe, is still living.
Yeah.
Fred MacArthur. The chief chassis man was a real rough character.
Huh?
Can I remember? George Grimm.
Two M's?
George Grimm, yeah, I think it was two M's. Must have weighed 300 pounds.
Oh, intimidating.
Right. One of the things that was interesting at Packard that when we developed the new body and finally got it into production, which was quite innovative for its time, it had the largest die-cast grill in the industry. It went from fender to fender, and I think it was the only one in the industry at the time. I recall us getting some die-cast award or Diecast
really?
Institute Award.
Metalworking Society?
Yeah, one of those societies. Johnny Reinhardt developed the new Cormorant, which was the hood ornament. If you remember, it had looked like a bird ornament on it. It was actually supposed to be a cormorant.
How do you spell that?
I'd say C-O-R-M-E-R-E-N-T, which is a bird.
A-N-T.
Pardon?
A-N-T. Cormorant.
Cormorant. Maybe that's correct pronunciation.
So Reinhardt developed the hood ornament.
And it was so successful that it was very similar to today's voguish thing where the kids go around stealing all the hood ornaments.
You lost a lot of them.
It was marvelous because we would have sold as many hood ornaments or as many cars as we sold hood ornaments, they'd still be in business today.
Can you describe the cormorant? Was it in flight or what? I assume that's a bird.
Yeah, it's a bird, and I'm sure any brochure I'll show you the. It was a bird with its wings raised probably 30 degrees back in the air.
Okay.
It was quite a lovely thing for its time.
Do you have a cast in the. Who manufactured it for you?
I don't recall.
But some vendor.
Okay. It was some vendor. But he could hardly keep up with the production on it. Right?
Was John proud of that, John Reinhardt? Was he?
Yes, he was quite proud of it.
Yeah.
I believe that it was the first vehicle that hit the market in the United States that the driver could see both front fenders. You know, the hood and the fenders were at one level, and we thought at the time it was quite low, which it was in comparison to the previous models. But that was one of the great design features of the vehicle.
We had a marvelous grill and a marvelous hood arms. In those days, that was the car's badge, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. The distinction that you found on the street. How was it insured?
Packard was, I believe at that time, still the number one vehicle. Cadillac hadn't taken it over yet.
Really?
Yes, I believe it was.
48 and 49. How were the interiors? Did anybody on your staff have to do with the interior?
We did the interior and exterior.
Did you?
They were always done that way at that particular time. The fabrics we picked out, the instrument panel, Johnny and I did. The exterior we did naturally. But the instrument panel, I say, was adequate for its day.
Was it?
You know, the interior was quite plush on the patrician.
That was the top of the line.
Which was the top of the line.
Did you employ women in those days to be fabric and color consultants?
No, yeah. There weren't any women.
No. So pretty much around the world.
It was pretty much a man's world. The fabrics, Briggs, of course, had a large stock of them.
That's right.
And we picked it out, you know.
Paints pretty much the same way, too.
Paints were the same way. Ed McCauley was, I guess that's really his greatest contribution was color. He loved bronze cars.
Oh, he did?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we always had a bronze in the line. Right. If you recall Ed McCauley at all, he always kept I call it a supercar, really.
Really?
Okay. Ed always made a two-door coupe out of any Packard, and it gave it an extreme long rear deck, and if I recall, about a 72-inch hood. Or an 80-inch hood. They were just cartoons, really.
Were they?
And, of course, he had them all built at Briggs and in our model shop, and he was constantly reworking his own vehicle. That was his, really, the only thing he had to do. Mm-hmm. But,
Grissinger, he didn't come over, did he? He stayed with
No.
Kaiser Frazier went on to Ford.
Right, he went to Ford after that. In fact, that's an interesting switch because I was in on that one also.
What happened?
Well, It's probably jumping too far forward.
That's right.
All right. When is that Continental Mark II?
Mm-hmm.
In 56. Reinhardt and myself were given the task to by Harley Kopp to come up with some names of designers that could contribute to the project.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Buzz Grissinger had was terminated at Kaiser's because Kaiser went to the Dickens.
All
right. And Buzz had opened up a design studio with, God, I don't recall the other guy's name. But anyways, we submitted Buzz's name as a possible consultant on the Continental Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
And by God, he was hired to do it, and that got his contact to get into Ford Motor Company. So, I don't know if Buzz will agree with that, but that's really the way it happened. Yeah.
You were you were there for 3 years. It must have been enjoyable at Packard, 48 to 52.
Right.
Was there an indication that they were in trouble toward the end of your tenure there?
No, in fact, when I left Packard Motor Car Company,
they were still going strong.
They were going strong, and they were the only solvent automotive company in the United States. They didn't owe anyone a nickel.
That's incredible.
And
what went wrong, looking back? Was it the design got too huge and garish?
They just let it go too long, in my opinion.
Did they?
And
without fixing it.
Right. And I think that, what was it? Nance got in there. They facelifted the body, in fact. I think they facelifted it only once.
The 50?
Right, 50 body.
The one that you'd worked on.
Right. They put a new front end on it. They did very little to the rest of the vehicle, as I recall. But I think it was Mr. Nance went over there.
John J. Nance.
Right.
Sort of
and he
the
came
undertaker.
Out of the...
Where had he been?
I thought it was out of the appliance industries.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean heavy appliance?
Heavy appliance. It was either...
Refrigerators?
GM or GE or Westinghouse or something like that. This is what I recall. It may be completely
wrong. He was looked upon as a sort of a
financial genius.
Financial genius.
Right. But he went over there, and I guess he tore up the lines. Packard had two lines at the time. And
what lines were they?
The assembly lines.
Oh, I see.
There were only two assembly lines. And that started at Grand Boulevard and ended up on, whatever the name of the street is. It's about a mile long. Not even a mile. It wasn't a mile.
Running north and south. Grand Boulevard runs east and west.
East and west, so it was running north.
Uh-huh.
And it ran up to, was it Concord? No, Concord was the street. There's another street there. God, I can't recall.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to see an old city map, I guess.
Right.
But evidently, he tore up the lines 3 or 4 times, and you just can't do
physically?
That.
Physically? Try and rearrange them for more efficient production or what?
Right. I don't know what the hell he had in mind, but the company just went right down the drain.
Mm.
It was a damn shame. Really
powerful
was.
And good company.
Right. So
of course,
put them
their product did become, along with the rest of the industry, rather
dated.
Dated and grotesque and large and obscenely decorated.
Yeah.
I remember those little last Packers. They were just monstrous.
Yeah.
And so horrible, decorated.
Yeah. That was. Taken over by Dick Teague, Dick Teague went in there.
Well, Bill Schmidt was involved.
And Bill Schmidt, right.
Did you work with either of those gentlemen?
I worked for Dick about 2 days.
2 days?
And I left.
How about Schmidt?
No, Dick was all right. Schmidt came in afterwards.
You liked Dick Teague? Huh?
Yeah, Dick Teague was all right.
Nice guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Heart's in the right place.
Yeah. No, I left very shortly after Dick came in, because Johnny had Johnny Reinhardt had already been romanced by Ford Motor Company.
Oh, yes.
To start off on another project.
And, so who approached you at before, and how did that come about?
Reinhardt. John Reinhardt.
Oh, I see. He's gotten over to before and he needed help.
It was my understanding, and I don't know if this is true either, but John was hired by Harley Cotton.
They were recruiting for the new Mark II that was
right.
Said that it was being put together.
Which was really, at that time, Mark II wasn't the only project. And I have this in my diary, I guess. But the special projects, and I think that's what it was called.
Special products.
Right. Was originally the thought was to diversify Ford Motor Company.
Oh, uh-huh. And to non-automotive lines.
Right.
It's nearly. Finished.
And this was to branch out. Uh-huh. Even at that time, they recognized that the company should be in other things rather than automotive. And this is the reason that John was hired in, and John, from his past experience with me, mm-hmm. invited me over to join the group.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way it was explained to me, that we were not only to do automotive, but to investigate other businesses for Ford Motor Company. And this particular group was to diversify the company.
That's why it was called special products.
Correct.
And not
projects.
Yeah, or projects. Yeah.
Right, which sort of turned around and became one.
So where were you? Where were you housed in those days?
We finally ended up out in the old Ford Trade School, right out, cornered by Michigan, and
close to Southfield.
Right, Southfield, east of Southfield. It was right out in the middle of that whole farmyard.
Which is now the Ford World Headquarters.
Correct.
Right.
And in the washer and dryer building, which are very close to the center.
Of Fairlane. They reached out to advertising companies or something.
Yeah.
In the first Fairlane project.
Mm-hmm. Now, when one of the projects that came up was, of course, the Continental Mark II, and the whole object of the Continental Mark II, it was simply a Continental in those days. We came up with the Mark II later.
Yeah. Mostly
was
bad.
To gain back what Lincoln had originally, because Cadillac had the market now that Packard had dropped out of business. It took 25 years for Cadillac to put Packard to death. And we figured that it was going to take 25 years for Lincoln to put Cadillac to death. And you could almost see the cycle, really. And it's happening today.
Yes, yes.
See? But
There's also William Clay Ford had joined the company, had he not?
Right.
And I suspect that his brothers were looking for something for him to specialize in.
Well, Harley Kopp was the chief engineer, or really the director of this entire project.
Chief body engineer.
Right.
Yeah.
And sitting down one evening over at the Dearborn Inn, he went on with the dissertation that our main purpose or charge at that time was to be the instructors for Henry Clay Ford, William Clay Ford, familiarize himself with the automotive business.
Would not have engineering training and not work in the business as the other two brothers had.
Right. And I think it was the very next day, after I was hired in.
It was in 1992. 52.
For 52. Mm-hmm. That Harley Kopp brought Bill Ford into the building and introduced himself. Terrific guy, really is. Very nice person.
This is at the old Ford Trade School.
And at the old Ford Trade School.
On Michigan Avenue.
Right.
Right. Your feeling for Mr. Ford was one of instant rapport.
Yes, I believe it was. And Harley was such a smooth talker anyways. No matter who he introduced, you felt very comfortable with.
Uh-huh.
But Bill was young. We were all young at the time.
Enthusiastic, all learning at the same time.
Right. And Bill admitted he didn't know a damn thing. He didn't know a rear quarter panel from a shovel. And he would ask. We would use terms and he'd say, "What the hell are you guys talking about?" You know, then we'd have to sit down and explain what we were talking about. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, I think, Mr. Fanner, we should stop right there.
All right.